The Torah portion of Pekudei is this week, and we're 602 in the Gutnik Chumash. And this class is given in memory of Blin Pesel Basav Pesach Halevi and in memory of my father-in-law, Harav Gersh Ben Harav Ben Sion. And this is a Hakel year. I just want to say a quick word that usually the Torah portions of Vayakel and Pekudei come together. Mm-hmm. And Vayakel means to gather, Pekudei means a specific accounting. And this year, which is a Hakel year, where there's a spiritual energy of Jews coming together, and hopefully we'll get to talk about that when it comes my turn. So this year we had each point emphasized. Vayakel last week, about Jews getting together, and Pekudei about the detailed accounting. With that in mind, you're on.
So in the last few weeks we've had some really wonderful friends who've given us lots of new things. One of the things that was given to us is some exercise equipment. I guess they were telling us we need it, which is true. Not you. No, and we're very, very grateful because we do need it. And basically today the study is out there that sitting is the new smoking. So, not that we didn't know it, but with the kind of life we lead, people always say, oh, you must burn so much energy. I said, yeah, I use a lot of energy, except it's all in the kitchen, and I'm busy cooking, so it doesn't really, or stressing, or sitting at the computer, or teaching, doesn't burn the calories. So someone actually went and made sure that we have something that we can use in the house, exercise equipment. So why am I sharing all this? Are we sitting ourselves to death is today's mantra, today's articles, a lot of them are about that. The question is, I am sure you all know the answer about whether are we sitting ourselves to death and is sitting the new smoking. The question is, does the same thing work out spiritually? Can we sit ourselves to death spiritually, mentally? Do we have to be constantly challenging ourselves, walking, moving spiritually, just the same way that we get so into our physical exercise? Are we challenging ourselves enough so that our sitting spiritually is not smoking? It's not the new smoking. So let's take a look. I put the Tehillims out there, if you don't mind, and you can share. Just the first perek in Tehillim, the first few verses, on the red ones with page 6, the blue ones, it's chapter 1. Ashrei ha'ish asher lo halach ba'atzat rishaim. Praiseworthy is the man who did not walk in the counsel of the wicked. Uvederech ha'teim lo amad, and stood not in the path of the sinful. Uvemoshav leitzim lo yashav, and sat not in the session of the scorners. So right here in the beginning of Psalms, which we, many of us, say every single day, right away, there's an obsession with movement. What's happening here? He starts out by walking, right? And what happened? He walked, and then he ended up standing in the place of sinners. And if he stood in the place of sinners, he'll end up sitting in the place of scorners. So spiritually, if a person is not careful, it can work backwards as well. And that leads us into another verse while we have the Tehillim out in Perek 115, chapter 115, number 4 to 8, which you'll be very familiar with because it's from Tehillim. What does it say? So Tehillim, what do you have? Their idols are silver and gold, the work of man's hand. They have mouths that do not speak, eyes but do not see, ears but do not hear, noses but do not smell. They have hands that cannot feel, feet that cannot walk, nor can they make a sound with their throats. Those who make them will be like them. So will all who trust in them. So what's the Tehillim saying? If you live for lifeless things, as it says in the bumper sticker, he who has the most toys in the end wins. He becomes like them, as the Tehillim says. He becomes lifeless. If that's what you're into, if you're not into moving forward spiritually, God forbid, you can become lifeless spiritually. And that is very much the focus, even though this week is Parshas Pekudei, the end of the Parsha is going to give us a very, very beautiful insight into how important it is to making sure that we're moving, not just physically, but that we keep moving spiritually. We know as Jews, right away from the beginning, with the first Jew, we have God's command to Abraham, Lech Lecha. And as the Rebbe always used to say, a Jew has to be a Mahalech. A Jew has to be someone who keeps going. The Rebbe used to tell us every living thing must grow. We don't stand still. It's the escalators either going up or it's going down. We have to keep going and growing. So right away in the beginning of our history, we have Abraham who at the age of 99, what did he do? He ran to meet those strangers. And before that, we see how he kept walking, he kept going. God says to him, "Hitalech lefanai veheyeh tamim." Go before me and be unblemished, pure, basically. Mm-hmm. And the same again we have with Moses and the Jewish people. What did the Jewish people? The Jewish people we know are the idea of the wandering Jew. We've been going. They went out of Egypt. They marched out of Egypt. And then, of course, 40 years that they kept going forward in the desert. So that's who we are. We're supposed to be moving, walking. So this week at the end of the Parsha, at the end of Parshat Pekudei in Shvi'i, the last section that we're going to read, finally the Mishkan is all set up. Page 612, mm-hmm. 613. The Mishkan is all set up. And God's glory filled the Mishkan. What does it say? 34, verse 34, Janice, if you don't mind reading for us.
The cloud covered the tent of the meeting, and the glory of God filled the tabernacle.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Moshe could not enter the tent of the meeting because the cloud rested upon it, and the glory of God filled the tabernacle. When the cloud rose up over the tabernacle, the children of Israel would set out on all their journeys. But if the cloud did not rise up, they did not set out until the day that it rose. For God's cloud would remain on the tabernacle by day, and there was a fire on it at night. Therefore, the eyes of the entire house of Israel in all their companions.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, so what the Torah is telling us is that the Mishkan was set up, and the way the Jews knew when to travel is when the cloud of glory would rise up from the Mishkan, and it was actually ahead of the Jewish people, that is how they would travel. And if they were traveling at night, there was fire in the cloud so that they can see it. What the Jews knew that if the cloud is moving, they have to keep moving. But it's very interesting. God was directing the traffic. But it's very interesting, for those who read in the Hebrew, the word that is used, and I'll just go back to Lamed Vav 36, Behelot ha'anan me'al ha'mishkan, and when the cloud lifted up from the Mishkan, Yisu b'nei Yisrael, the Jewish people traveled, b'chol mas'ehem, on all their journeys. And just note the way, the word mas'ehem, journeys, mem samach ayin, right? And then we go to the last verse, and it says again, Ki anan Hashem al Mishkan, the cloud of God, the cloud of glory is on the Mishkan, Yomam, and in the daytime, Ve'esh Tielaila, and fire by night, Bo'le'ene Kol Yisrael, for the eyes of the Jewish people, Bechol Masehem, in all their journeys. So now in 38, it is saying that the cloud of glory is on top of the Mishkan. What did I say? When they were traveling, the cloud was ahead of them, showing them where to go. And now it's saying that in all of their mas'ehim, it looks like it should be the word journey, but we know that the cloud of glory stayed upon the Mishkan when they weren't journeying. So it's interesting, Rashi, who is the foremost commentary, tells us there, just going to the end of the Rashi on the bottom of page 614. V'chol eila masa, and it says, Lefi shemimakom hachaniya chazru v'nasu. Because from their resting place, from the encampment, That is where they, that was the catapult for them to journey on. Lakach, because of that, Nikru Kulan Masaot. Therefore, it is all called with the same word, journey. Rashi is actually giving us a very, very profound explanation here. That it is true the word journey is spelt in Hebrew Mem Samach Ayin, and that really means to continue to travel. But because when the Jewish people were resting, even their resting was the catapult to continue on, therefore, even the time when they rested, which is indicated in 38 because it says now the cloud was on top of them, that even that is really a journey for us. Because for the Jewish people, sometimes we have to stop for a few minutes to regain, to actually rejuvenate, because that was the time they were in the Mishkan and godliness filled the Mishkan, right? And they were able to absorb. But really, truthfully, it's all a journey for us. Whether we're sitting physically or we're traveling, it's all a journey because it's a catapult for us to do more. Our goal in life is not to sit still. Our goal in life is to continue. And truthfully, we are all journeying. I had actually had printed off. I'm sure some of you are familiar with this poem, but I thought it was really apropos. When things go wrong, as they sometimes will, when the road you're trudging seems all uphill, when the funds are low and the debts are high, and you want to smile, but you have to sigh, when care is pressing you down a bit, rest if you must, but don't you quit. Life is queer with its twists and turns, as every one of us sometimes learns. And many a fellow turns about when he might have won and had he stuck it out. Don't give up, though the pace seems slow. You may succeed with another blow. Often the goal is nearer than it seems to a faint and faltering man. Often the struggler has given up when he might have captured the victor's cup. And he learned too late when the night came down how close he was to the golden crown. Success is failure turned inside out, the silver tint in the clouds of doubt. And you never know how close you are. It might be near when it seems afar. So stick to the fight when your heart is hit. It's when things seem worse that you must not quit. So we as Jews are travelers. We're not quitters. We keep going no matter what, no matter what age we are. And in fact, we see with a lot of our greats that the older they were, the more they felt compelled to continue and to accomplish things. We see that even with Yaakov, with our father Jacob, that even when he came to a point and he was going to settle and build a home finally for his family, he got out of Laban's domain. It says that what did he do? He settled in Sukkot. He built Sukkot. Sukkot, it was his encampment. But what do we know? Sukkot are temporary dwellings. They're not those permanent kind of dwellings that a bayit is a house. They never set up a bayit. Avraham didn't set up a bayit. He set up a tent. And Yaakov Avinu set up Sukkot, these very temporary dwellings. You know, there's a very famous story attributed to the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Chabad Rebbe, and also attributed to the Chafetz Chaim. Either way, it's a great story of this man who came to visit the great rabbi, and he looked around the house, and this was this great rabbi. He had so many followers, and he looked around, and it was just furnished so sparsely. It was like so bare, and he had a bench, and he had a very plain table, and he says to him, Rebbe, where is your furniture? And so the Rebbe turned to him and he says, where's yours? And so he says, but Rebbe, I'm just traveling. And the Rebbe said, so am I. I'm just traveling. We're just travelers here in this world. And it's not he who has the most toys in the end wins. It's how much can we manage? How much ground can we cover spiritually? How much more can we go forth? I know my father, who was in his 80s, he was so nervous sometimes. I didn't act nervous about it, but I'm saying when you'd ask him, like, what's happening to him. He says, I still have to finish. I have to finish the daf. Like if he was learning a certain amount of Gemara, of Talmud that he had to accomplish, he still had to finish the Rambam. If he had to go into a medical procedure, he would come home and say, but I'm not finished. And he knew he had to grow. And this man is 80s. He'd say, okay, take it easy, you know. You can take it a little easy today. And you had a heart procedure, and you had this, and you had that. Until he had a stroke, every day he felt, I must accomplish. There are things that I have to accomplish. And that is a man who also physically, he was responsible for his family. He built up. He did his jobs that he had to do. But he also felt spiritually, I have to continue. And I've seen this with people who give charity, who are philanthropists, who have the ability. It's like, they could sit and they can just go put their feet up, but they're worried. I have to do, I have to accomplish, because that's who we are. In fact, recently in London, there was a Jew, a British Jew, his name was George Wiedenfeld. He died at the age of 96. He was a successful publisher, a friend, the confidant of the European Jews, an inveterate, a fighter for peace, a passionate Zionist. He was the political advisor to Chaim Weizmann. So he was a very, very busy man. He recently, close to the end of his life, he saved 20,000 refugees from ISIS. And it's towards the end of his life, they said not only was he very active, he was hyperactive to do as much as he could. So in an interview with the Times on his 92nd birthday, he was asked the following question. Most people in their 90s slow down. You seem to be speeding up. Why is that? He replied, when you get to 92, you begin to see the door about to close. I have so much more to do before the door closes that the older I get, the harder I have to work. And, you know, there's a formula. It says in the Mishnah, it says, Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor. It's not for you to complete the task. V'lo ata ben chorin, but you are not free, lihi batel mimena, to sort of wiggle your way out of it. We have a task to complete. Does it mean that we're going to finish everything? No, not necessarily. But it's our job to do it as long as we can, and then we hand over the baton at the end. Sometimes we have to do that. But the point is, it's about the journey. And the journey is God, even the settling is the journey. We have to remember that. That's what this last pasuk in Parshat Pekudei tells us. It seems to be, it's a technical parsha about details about the clothing of the Kohen Gadol and putting together the Mishkan and putting it all together. But in these few words, we get the lesson of what it's all about. It's about our journey in life and how we have to keep on taking. We finish something, we keep going, we never just say, aha, I'm done, I'm finished, now I just put my feet up. And that's something that keeps us actually going. And we know, spiritually, sitting is the new smoking, so we can't let ourselves just sit. We have to push ourselves and we have to say, okay, I've done this, I've taken upon myself, I'm kosher now, I do this much study, what can I push myself a little more? We know that people used to go to the Rebbe, and they would tell the Rebbe glowing accounts of the things they were doing, they were building, they were studying, and they would expect to hear from the Rebbe, great man, you know, pat on the back. And often the Rebbe was like, it took me a while when I watched these clips that the Rebbe was often saying, you know, like, okay, and what next? And don't be, you know, like, don't rest on your laurels. But at the same time, the Rebbe always gave them his smile and his encouragement and something, but he always said, and what's next? And that keeps us alive, as we know. Physically, if you just stop, it's going to stop. And the same thing spiritually. You have to keep going and exercising your neshama, your spirit, and your mind, so that none of it is stagnant.
And on that, thank you. That was beautiful. Don't pause yet. Because actually, part of what I prepared, the very last item, so I'm actually going to mention it here because it dovetails perfectly, and it's on the same page, 614, 615, in the Chumash from the Rebbe on this point. Because if you just take a look at the first verse that we heard you read, it says that Moshe was not able to enter the tabernacle. Why? Ki shochan olav ha'onon, because there was a cloud upon it. Kvar Hashem malesa mishkan. God's glory filled the mishkan. The cloud, we call it the cloud of glory. The very next verse says about this demonstration of God's presence, when do the people journey, which we just heard all about, Uvehe alot ha'anan me'al ha'mishkan, when the divine presence seems to be departing and things are getting dark, meaning to say there's a bit of a vacuum of spirituality, this is the time to journey forward. Now,
there must be more to it than that, because the Anand is actually vapors.
So on this point, that when the divine presence departs, then it's time to travel forward, the way the Rebbe puts it, it's actually a very sobering meditation. And I say that word, meditation, specifically. So in other words, and I'm just telling you how it spoke to me, and I'm sharing it with you. So let's say there's something in our life which is really a challenge. And for those who speak a little Yiddish, this is as der kitchet in pupik. I don't know how to say that. It's scratching you in your gut. Okay, it doesn't have the same ring to it, right? As der kitchet in pupik, right? So then, we're about to finish this second book, which is the book of going out of Egypt. And we have to, and we pause. Wait a minute. It seems like the divine cloud is departing, that there's a vacuum here, there's darkness. So just as we're about to end, we're being told, this is the time for you to journey forward. All of the growing, all of the marching forward that we just heard about needs to be underscored when that happens. I'd like to tell you something very beautiful that happened many years ago to friends of ours. There was a couple who came from Switzerland, and I'll just say his name. This is somebody who converted to Judaism, and his name is Yosef. His last name begins with the letter T, as in table. I don't think I should say the name on tape, but this is very, very complimentary. So here is a couple who became Jewish for only one reason. They wanted to get close to God, pure and simple. Because this fellow, this Yosef, was a conductor in Switzerland. Had a beautiful, has until today, a beautiful baritone voice. So he had his musical career all laid out. And everything was just great. So what was missing? His closeness to God. So when he came here, I know it sounds familiar. I'm very happy to say those words. It sounds familiar. So when he came here, this is going back now to the 80s, actually. And he had no job. And to him, it was a simple matter. God will provide. This is before he completed his conversion. God will provide, right? There was a vacuum in the materialism of his life. God will provide. And as I've said on many occasions, any person who ever goes through a proper conversion, the story is big and long, and they're all very different, and there's many facets to it. A lot of them have to do with family, etc., etc. And of course, his story was similarly. It was big, and it has all its elements. So that's really something that when I was preparing for the class today, I thought about a particular area in my own life where, if I just be superficial, I see nothing but the cloud departing. But if I'm going to speak to myself in your presence at this moment, then I should really say to myself, how am I going to march forward? So that's one thought of the Rebbe. So we're now going to the beginning of the Parsha in the Gutenberg Chumash, page 602 and 603. And I'd like to talk about the theme of having the correct prescription in your glasses. Meaning to say, to look at other people and the world around us, to look at it correctly. And I'd like to introduce this with a little story, and then I have a special piece which I prepared for Binyamin's sake. And I'll tell you why I say that, because he often comes up with the really nice gematrias lately, numeric values, and there's something that comes from about 1,000 years ago that was said actually in the beginning of this parasha, and it fits beautifully, and it's going to be really, it's really beautiful. So here's the story. A little over 200 years ago, the first Chabad Rebbe, he lived in the Lithuanian area, and he was teaching Chassidus, trying to spread Chassidus, where there were many, many great scholars who were very skeptical, which is actually a healthy thing, depending on how you exercise your skepticism. So one fellow goes over to the Alter Rebbe and he says that I see from amongst those people who follow you that they act as if they are Hasidim. The word Hasidim means pious. And this is not a name that we gave ourselves, by the way. Those who opposed Hasidim gave us that name, pious. They meant it in quotes. But we just accepted it and removed the quotes, if you know what I mean. Right? It's true. Because the Alter Rebbe wanted the name to be Bali Tshuva, meaning people who are returning to God. You know, in a continual, perpetual state of returning to God. Bali Tshuva. So at any rate, he says, you have people who they consider themselves Chassidim, and they do all the motions, this and that, but they're not really, that's not really where they're at. They're not holding by it. In other words, they're more superficial than what is really demanded. The Alter Rebbe answered, if that's the case, let the words of the Mishnah apply to them. Now, that's what he said. What did he mean, the Mishnah? There are thousands of Mishnahs. Because if we know some of the Mishnahs, then we know automatically what he was speaking about. And I'm sticking that in because that's the way in scholarship, the way we speak, that you just say a phrase and you know what you're saying. It's like saying, they say, oh, people who tell jokes, okay, joke number 56, right? But in the real scholarly world, you can actually do that and people know what you're saying. So what he was referring to, the Mishnah says that a person who acts as if he's a cripple and really he's not, then he is very likely that very soon the Almighty will put him into that position. Now, I don't know the explanation. I'm going to say it off recording just because I could be wrong. But here it is, at least the way I think it's the meaning.
That's why when we were kids, like if we, you probably know exactly, you're probably going to say the same thing. Like, God forbid we should sit down in someone's wheelchair or use someone's crutches because it's like you're asking for it.
Right.
There are people.
So what the Alter Rebbe was saying to this fellow, remember he said, hey, you have the chassidim, and they're behaving like chassidim, really they're not. So the Alter Rebbe said, let it be fulfilled, the words of the Mishnah, meaning to say, there is somebody behaves as if, eventually he'll become. They behave as if they are chassidim, eventually they'll become. So what I'd like to talk about is the correct prescription glasses when we look at other people. And that is about seeing people's potential, which is something that we repeat often here. We're going to see it now in today's parsha in a very special way. But before we do that, I mentioned before that we're going to do a gematria. So take a look at the top line in the Hebrew of Eile Pekudei HaMishkan. This is the accounting of the Mishkan. So for those who know the numeric values, the word HaMishkan has the numeric value of 405. I'll do it right. It's 5 plus 40 plus 300 plus 20 plus 50. So that's 405. And if you add the 5 letters, I'm sorry, it's not. Did I say that? Not 405. It's 450. It's 415. That's what it is. It's 415. And if you add the 5 letters, you get 420. So HaMishkan, the tabernacle, which basically is referring to the temporary tabernacle that they could dismantle and travel with, is alluding to the 420 years of the Second Temple. That was preceded by the First Temple, which stood for 410 years. So can you guess what's the numeric value of the next word, Mishkan, tabernacle? Right? This is the accounting of the Mishkan. Mishkan, right, is 410. So this is alluding to the 410 years of the first tabernacle. And this one, and the next word is Ha'edut, the testimony. And that has a numeric value of 479 because it's 5 plus 70 plus 4 plus 400. So 479. Which was the years from when the Mishkan was built until it was no longer used because Shlomo had built the first temple. So 479 years. In other words, what I'm saying here is that this is the accounting of the Mishkan, the Mishkan of the testimony, alludes to that what we are learning here is about all of the tabernacles. Not just this one, but it's alluding to all of them. So coming back, so it's not only about showing numeric value, it's showing about future relevance of the message of this week's parsha. So with that in mind, we're going to jump back a little bit to a previous parsha, and we're going to see about the high priest and clothes that he had to wear. So chapter 28, verse 43. So let's just understand, when we talk about the high priest, and as we've said so many times, every one of us, minus one person I suppose, is not ever going to be the high priest. And of course, if you're not a direct descendant of the first high priest, then it's not you, or me for that matter. So the reason that we learn so much about the clothes of the high priest is because it's teaching us some things for the rest of us to learn. One of the things is, the Gemara tells us that this garment, the cap, I'll call it, or the turban if you like, atoned for such and such. The tzitz, that's the golden band, it atoned for such and such. The breastplate, each of the garments says it atoned for something. Now, on the surface, it actually sounds very un-Jewish. Why would I say that? Simple. Normally, if we have to atone for anything, we have to make amends. And we know this already. We've said it so many times. If I hurt somebody, physically, financially, emotionally, spiritually, God says, don't turn to me to make amends until you have made amends to that person. What, I'm going to forgive you, God says, what you did to somebody else, once that person has forgiven you, now you can ask me for forgiveness for having in general done something that you shouldn't have done, which is to hurt one of my children.
It's very different from the other people.
Very different. So when we say that this holiest man, the high priest, he puts on such a garment and it atones for, what does that mean? It means that this garment, which everyone was speaking about, teaches us how to atone for such and such. So, for example, let's take a look at just the band on the forehead, and if we have time, we'll talk a little bit more about it. The band is called the tzitz. Tzitz means to peer. Peer as in to look out in the distance. Now, the word, actually, I'll say it now already. The word forehead is metzach. Metzach is a forehead, okay? And it says that the tzitz, this band, is supposed to be on the metzach, actually on the top of this page, actually, 544. V'hoyah, and it shall be al metzach Aharon, on the forehead of Aharon. When we ask for forgiveness for the sins on Yom Kippur, and we want to ask forgiveness for being audacious, or in Yiddish we say chutzpah, we call it azus metzach. Azus metzach, audacity of the forehead. And I'm going to guess that it means that way is because if I'm big who knows what, and you're nothing, so therefore I can be audacious. It doesn't matter what anybody says. I can put you down, or I can just behave as I'm the king of the castle. And the forehead, we can see, you know, it's just like my forehead is exploding, so to speak. So the golden band is the golden way we look at other people. What's the golden way to look at other people? On the golden band was written, Kodesh Lashem. Consecrated, and I'm using that word on purpose, because consecrated not only means holy, but it also means separated and dedicated for something holy, right? Consecrated to God, or consecrated unto God. So if I look at everyone around me as consecrated to God, why is everybody around me consecrated to God? Simple. Because if they were not here for God's purpose, if they were not essential for God's purpose, they wouldn't be here. So whoever I look at, I'm looking at somebody who's consecrated by his being on this world for God's purpose. How could you have audacity if you look at people this way? It's impossible. You can't. So therefore, the golden band atones for audacity. It doesn't mean he wore the band and therefore my audacity is atoned because he's wearing the golden band. No. it's the way to atone for audacity is to behave like his golden band. That's the idea of the high priest wearing these garments. Okay, so with that in mind, we're going to see how, when did Aaron have to wear all the clothes, and when did he have to wear certain of the clothes?
Just going to ask you that.
Yeah, so we're going to do that right now. So right now, after listing the clothes for the first time, which is also repeated in today's parasha, which is why we're here on page 544. What does it say? V'hoyu al Aharon v'al bonov, and it shall be on Aaron and on his sons, b'vom and oel moed, when they come into the oed, into the tent of meeting, o'v'gishtam el ha-mizbeach, or when they approach the altar, which is right before the covered part, which is the tent. In other words, the outside altar. When they approach it, l'sharet b'kodesh, to do the holy service. So in other words, the Kohen, the high priest, had to wear all eight clothes when he was doing any of the services. We're not talking about the other Kohanim now, even though we could, but we're not going to right now. So that's when he did the services, he had to wear all eight. And now I'd like us to find... So we are now on page 542, and I'd like to call your attention on to verse 35. And we're going to go a little bit backwards, as you shall see in a minute, on purpose. V'hoyo, and it shall be, we'll soon see what it is. Al Aharon, on Aharon, the shareis, as service or duty. V'nishma kolo, and his voice will be, and the sound of him will be heard. V'vo'el ha-kodesh, when he comes to the holiness, meaning into the tent, into the Mishkan, lifnei Hashem, before God, uvetzeito, and when he goes out. Meaning to say that the aforementioned, which we're soon going to see what they are, he must wear if he's merely entering the Mishkan, even if he's not doing service. You see that? What we read on the next page, we read that when he's doing service, when he's going into the tent of meeting for service, or he's doing the on the altar, which is outside. But here it says, he has to wear the aforementioned. What are the aforementioned? So let's back up on to verse 31. There is a what's called a me'il, and I'll soon open up the book and show you the me'il. And you also have, prior to it, on page 540, verse 30, it talks about the breastplate. And prior to that, on page 540, it's talking about what looked like a backward apron. And it's really all of the verses on this page 540. So if you look, actually, I don't need to bring out the book, because if you look at the picture on page 541 of the Gutnik, you're going to see the breastplate, how it's attached to this, what's like a backward apron, which incidentally, I believe 2 years ago, Simi gave just an amazing talk on the meaning of this backward apron. And I encourage you to go there in the recordings. And the other third one was on page 543. Look at the picture also, a certain kind of a robe with pomegranates and bells at the bottom. As you can see, it's highlighted. So what do we have here? There are eight clothes which must be worn when he's doing service. But there are three clothes that he has to be wearing even if he just wants to go in to say, excuse me, I need to talk to you for a minute. If he has to do that, he has to wear at least these three. And why is that? So we have an absolutely beautiful insight from the Rebbe, and this has to do with the prescription glasses of how we're looking at the world. Similar to what we said about the tzitz, the golden band, but here we get into some specifics. And it is as follows. You have three types of Jews, but instead of referring to three types of Jews, I'm going to talk about the same three categories within every one of us. Let's just, for the sake of having the picture in front of us, let's have the Chumash open on page 541, where we see the breastplate, and we see the backward apron. So right now we're going to talk about the breastplate type of Jew, or the breastplate within yourself. And I think that I'd like to share it with you this way. This story I heard from Rabbi Pesach Kron. I believe it happened with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. If it wasn't him, it was someone else of that, somebody like him. And once he was going with somebody in Israel, I think maybe it was his son-in-law, and they got into a taxi where the taxi driver was not religious. So the taxi driver, who's not religious, he puts something on his head, you know, because he's not wearing a yarmulke, he sees the rabbi coming in, so he covers his head. So I'm going to say it's Rabbi Yaakov, maybe it was somebody else, but let's say it's Rabbi Yaakov. He said to the fellow next to him, Ein ato yodea, I'm saying with Ashkenazi accent on purpose, Ein ato yodea, kam oschar yesh lo al tnuah zu. You have no idea how much reward he receives, meaning the taxi driver, for this move, meaning, say, covering his head. And he explained with a story of one of the Gera Rebbes. I don't know which one. But in the old country, one of the Gera Rebbes would make it his practice that when he would go, I believe, to shul, instead of going the shorter route, he would go the longer route. And once, maybe one of his children, I don't remember, asked him, why do you go the longer route? He says, because when I go the longer route, I pass by the balagolas, what we would call today the taxi lineup. I actually haven't seen it over here, but in England, at least when I was a kid, there was such a thing all over London, including literally in the center of the street of Stamford Hill where I lived. You had an island, you had a few islands to help people cross the road, and by the island, one of the islands was for the taxi lineup, and literally those black taxis, if you know what I'm talking about, yeah, those tall things, they would literally line up, a taxi lineup, right? Okay, so you have a taxi lineup, but in those days it was horses and wagons. Now the people who dealt with horses and wagons, the balagolas, they were usually not the most sophisticated people. Very simple, Jewish people we're talking about, very simple. So the Gera Rebbe explained that when he goes longer route, he passes by this taxi lineup, so-called. And then the balagolas, these wagon drivers, they all say, a guten Tag, Rebbe, in other words, have a good day, how are you? He says, I'm giving them an opportunity to do something that respects Yiddishkeit. So I'm going the longer route to give them extra reward. So this, if it's Rabbi Yaakov, he said to the fellow next to him, that the fact that this taxi driver, he sees a rabbi, he knows, he decides he has to cover his head, that I'm going to call the attitude that is like the breastplate, where you have the names of the Jewish people engraved. It's the breastplate of judgment, where God would send prophecy through those stones. In other words, we have certain things that we do right. For many people, they'll come into shul, and maybe they'll behave a bit more respectful. That is the part that is the breastplate part. Now let's take a look at that picture again. You have on the so-called backward apron, we have on the top bands, right and left, two squares. Those are two stones, which on this page, it says that on each one, on six of them, six tribes were written on one stone, six tribes were written on the other. So this is going to be just a synopsis of something that Simi spoke about a couple of years ago, which I referenced before. And I really would encourage you to listen to that recording. It's the last time that the Parsha of Pekudei was separate, which I think was 2 years ago. And that is the idea that it's the so-called apron is taken from the back and bringing it forward. Right? It's wrapping around the back, primarily the lower half of the body, and it brings it forward. And that represents the struggle. There's certain things that we have to struggle. And I'd just like to share something that happened with me many years ago. I was much younger at the time. So to go to yeshiva, I lived in many years ago. This is I was a teenager.
That's what happens many years ago when you were younger.
That's right.
Yeah, makes sense.
Right? So to get to from London to Brunois, which is a suburb of Paris, we took a long journey. We took a 3.5 hour train to Dover, I believe it was.
And the ferry.
And then we took a ferry, an hour and a half, and then we took 4.5 hours train to Gare du Nord, which means, I guess, the northern station, the big station in Paris.
The north station.
And then we took the SNCF, NSCF train.
It's SNCF.
Oh, actually, we took that from the South Gare, and we took a subway in between, and we schlepped our baggage all of this way to save our parents on the airfare. And it was a full day. Now, why am I telling you this? Because very often, we'd be on the train, even though these are above ground trains, and there was a lot of times there were no seats. It was standing room for all those hours. When you have a full day and you're traveling like that, so it comes the morning, especially if you're leaving very early morning, you got to daven. Where are you going to daven? Daven right there. So when you're my age, I've davened in the airport for, thank God, for the last many years. I don't care about anybody's opinion. I didn't ask them their opinion. If I have to daven in the airport, I daven in the airport. Put on talis, put on film, big deal. Who cares? Sometimes I got to do a bris down south, so I'll pull over to one of the rest stops. Who cares who's around? I go out there, chilling, get my compass, make sure I know which way I'm facing, and I do my davening. But when you're younger, it's a little bit different. And I, for some reason, I remember in my head, there was one guy nearby where I was davening, and he also didn't have a seat. He was kind of sitting on the floor, and I'm putting on tefillin. So he says to whomever these words, bondage to religion. Okay, you understand? Bondage to religion. What I'm saying is that within us, we have that part of us that is ups and downs, a continual struggle. And then, turn page 543 in the Gurdit, where we have this garment which has the bells and pomegranates. You know what they say, an empty vessel makes a lot of noise. And it says actually on this page here in verse 35,
that's good.
It says,
that's the first
seven. I like that. It says, Vahoya al Aharon, this thing which it says in 34 that it should be a bell and a pomegranate, it should be on Aharon. Vanishma Kerla, the sound should be heard when he comes into the holiness. What does that mean? It means that you have that part of us that is like an empty vessel. Listen, I'll speak for myself. I surely know of certain places of my spiritual development that I'm hollow. I'm hollow, right? And that can make a lot of noise. It's hollow. So what do we have here? We have, let me just finish this line and then we'll, yep. So we have, on the one hand, when Aharon is coming to do actual service, he's wearing all eight clothes, because on a certain level, every Jewish person, he is, after all, he's doing the service as the agent of the entire Jewish people. So when he's doing this service, everything is included. And we understand that. But what if he's just walking in? Because he needs to say to one of the kohenim, I need to see you outside for a second. I need you to examine whatever, something. Just to go in, he has to have these three garments. Why? Because if we are going to just enter holiness, we need to include the Jew, or the part of our own Jew that is like the breastplate, that certain things that we're always going to do right, each one we have. For some people, it's what I said, that he sees the rabbi, he covers his head. For the other one is, I go to shul for an hour on Yom Kippur. And for somebody else, it's something else, and so on. For somebody, he says, Rabbi, I don't come to Shul Rosh Hashanah because I don't drive on Rosh Hashanah. In this community, somebody. Right? Okay, so that's his breastplate. Right? So we understand that. There has to be that. There also has to be included that part of us that struggles. But even the part that is hollow, look how the Torah describes it. Turn, look at page, verse 34 on this page, 542, 543. It's pamon, it's a bell of gold, not of brass, right? Golden bell, and a pomegranate. What's his business with his pomegranate? It wasn't a fruit pomegranate. Especially when you take a look at the commentators, what it actually looked like. There's a few opinions, but it wasn't exactly shaped like a pomegranate. Basically, it was a ball. A ball. Why pomegranate? Because a pomegranate alludes to something that in our shul here, we repeat over and over again throughout Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur every year. Every Jewish person is filled with good deeds like a pomegranate is filled with seeds. And I love to tell this story, which I've said it here a few times, which happened with the Rabbi Jacobson's father. For those who know, in other words, Rabbi Simon Jacobson, Rabbi Yossi Jacobson, his father. So he was the founder of the Allgemeine Journal, a newspaper in Yiddish in New York. Knew a lot of writers and so on and so forth. And one of them, there was one woman that he was dealing with, a writer, very anti-religious. You know, I'm not religious. He says, do you respect your parents? Sure. Do you ever help people? Yeah, of course I help people. You ever visit sick people? Well, of course. I think you're more religious than I am. In other words, even if a person doesn't think so, they have more in them than they think. Even if they think I'm hollow spiritually, or there's a part of me that's hollow, we're told here that nevertheless, that's what you have. So what the Rebbe is teaching us in this is that the correct prescription glasses is, if you're going to go into anything holy, you bring all of the sides of you. There's all of the sides. And that's how the high priest, who is on behalf of the Jewish people, that's how he is to look at everyone else. And for us, who look as to what is the right way to behave, that is how we behave as well. That's how we look at other people. I have to say that on this thing, and I think I'm going to close with this, because all of this has to be very, very real.
Can you just finish the sentence? The Lord.
So I want to just close with this thing. There's a word in Yiddish. Somebody help me how you say it in English. Do you know what a nudnik is?
Nuthead.
No, a nudnik. Is
a neck.
A pain in the neck or a pain in other places. Okay? So I want to say something. And this goes a little bit beyond, which I will say off recording. Okay? Just where I'm sitting. So you meet all sorts of people and you get tested with, sometimes you have a person who will talk your ear off. Every time. Sometimes you actually will end up hiding in somewhere just so you don't get your ear talked off. And sometimes there will be others who take advantage. Can I, for just... You can finish off the sentence. And it ends up being, and I would like to say, we need to step back. Because I'm saying this to you because I have to live this and I have to check myself to see if I'm being true to the things I say I believe in. You have to step back and say, okay, what is my role here? And what does God want me to do about this? Does God want me to make the nudnik uncomfortable? Does God want me to make this nudnik feel unwanted? Etc., etc. So this is another thing. We talk about all these lofty ideas. At least for myself, I can tell you, it's bamirim pupik, which means it's right there in my gut. It's something that I have to deal with on a very, very real level.